I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Indiana's agrotourism business. My guests will be Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about Indiana's agrotourism business. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So I'll start with you, Heather. We probably ought to start with some bait. What should we, talk to me about what agrotourism is.
Well, agrotourism is really the intersection of where agriculture meets culinary tourism, family travel, and just basic cultural tourism across the state of Indiana. And so just think of the places that you drive past even on your way to work. You're driving past farms and orchards and wineries, and that is agritourism, and it's a big business in Indiana.
How big a business?
You know, by the numbers, not exactly sure, but I will say we have about 1,500 members, and over 200 of them are what you could consider an agritourism destination.
So, Sarah, I guess the same question. You know, obviously, you're a winery, which means that you produce wine for
yes.
people to enjoy and all of that. But it's also a destination of sorts. You said, "How of your business? How big is sort of that come visit the winery? You know, the tourism piece of it."
Sure, I think it's different for every winery. But you know, the most basic setup is a tasting room. So inviting people to come into a space where they can learn more about the land where you are producing this product. And then to taste and hear the history and hear the notes. So that's kind of the most basic format. For us, we've expanded that to events, festivals, concerts, and our hope there is that we do become a place in our community where people know that they can bring their families, bring their friends, their neighbors, enjoy more than just, you know, maybe an hour of tasting, but several hours of music and food and conversation and entertainment. And to do it consistently, to come back and visit us over and over and bring new people. And so it just spreads. So I think, you know, there's a spectrum there of whether it's, you know, just a smaller scale space to, you know, we see thousands mm-hmm. of people every weekend with our concerts and our festivals. So it's just, yeah, being a space in that community where people can come. And
would you say it's like 50% of your business, or is it? I'm not going to ask for dollar figures
because
I know
yeah.
you're proprietary about that. But
for our business plan and our business model, definitely it is what we are known for, and it is what has kept our business alive is those events. So at least 50%.
Okay, Samantha, what drives agrotourism?
Well, I mean, I think there's a novelty factor to it. It's getting to experience some things firsthand rather than just maybe going and picking up a bottle of wine. You get to actually go to the winery and talk with some of the people who help develop some of the wine or even beer, because breweries are included in that, too. And you've mm-hmm. seen the growth in wineries and breweries across Indiana in recent years.
Is it primarily, Heather, wineries and breweries, or what are other examples of agrotourism?
So common examples across the state would be orchards. So just imagine in the fall, you think, I want to see leaves. I want to drive to Brown County. And I want apples, so I'm going to go to an apple orchard. And maybe you can pick your own, or maybe they've picked them for you. But people like to do it. It's always a winning situation on a weekend to say, I want some apples. I'm going to go to an apple orchard. It's strawberry season. I'm going to go to U-Pick. That's agritourism.
Samantha, we've done a lot of shows, and I know you've done reporting on this as well, about sort of the changing relationship people have with their food, with the, you know, they now, I mean, it's the eat local, they want a much greater sense of where the food came from and being able to, how much of that drives this agrotourism?
I think that being connected, that plays a huge factor, because I think also you think of like farm markets. That's another part of this, what's considered, at least by the state, of what agritourism is. So you think of those factors, and when people start wanting to go to the local farmers market and things like that, they're connecting with their farmer. They want to buy local, and that's a huge factor.
Sarah, why do people tell you that they come in when they come? I mean, what's driving? Because obviously they could buy the bottle of wine a lot of other places. It's important to them to make the connection and come to your winery, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think they do. They want to be a participant in that product. And that is asking those questions, coming, visiting, seeing the vineyards, meeting the people who are making the product. And for a winery, it's also just a lot of relaxation, you know, and so part of what we have to do is create that space that does feel like an escape from the everyday, even though we're just outside of downtown. And that is why people come. They want to see it. They want to feel connected to it. And they also just want a place to relax and enjoy themselves.
What, you know, when they come in, what for them defines a good experience at your winery?
Sure. You know, and everybody's kind of mission there is a little different, but we have people who want to come and be educated. So a good experience for them is being able to ask questions about the winery, about the wines, and have those questions answered. Sometimes it's just they want a break from whatever they need a break from, and they're on a date or they're with a group of girlfriends. And so it's providing that experience as well, providing them a quiet corner in the tasting room or a beautiful picnic table under a shady tree, and giving them that experience as well. So we aim to provide whatever experience people are looking for, whether it's educational or purely just relaxation.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about agrotourism here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Heather, you mentioned, I think, that there are 1,500 members, or more than 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an idea of the growth. You know, is that 1,500 been somewhat static, or are you picking up new people, new members all
every
the time?
Every day. So we will hit our 4-year anniversary on July 7th. And in that time, we've really been able to pick up members through grassroots outreach, marketing, word of mouth, but also through our events and then through a lot of the projects that we've helped create. So working within the farm to school world, working within helping our members make contacts with retailers, and then the event that we have coming up next Friday. It's a great way to kind of launch and put agriculture out there front and center for consumers. And so we've really been able to build a lot of momentum that way. But we average about one new member a day.
And is this new people who are starting new businesses, or in some ways repurposing the old business because this has created kind of a new market?
Well, we have a lot of members who maybe have reached a high level of success at the farmers market level. You know, they make a salsa. Their friends say, this is a fantastic salsa. You ought to try to sell this to a store. That's about the time we reach a lot of our members. They come to us and say, hey, we heard you can help counsel us or navigate us to people who could help with that retail conversation. Let's join Indiana Grown. We're a no-risk organization. We are free to join, and everything we do is free. So our hope is just to help keep agriculture on everyone's minds through events and outreach, from value added to hogs to sweet corn to even wine and beer.
Samantha, you know, same sort of question that I posed to Heather. What, are these primarily existing businesses that realize, oh, okay, there are new like farms that say, well, we could open our doors here, or wineries, and actually have access to an entirely new market?
I think there's a mix. I think you are seeing a growth in breweries and wineries developing, and you have seen new businesses there in the market. There's also, though, on the other hand, there are farms that are realizing maybe looking at ways to diversify their income. Maybe it's, you know, through some of these tours. Maybe it's like in the fall when there's, you know, October, I'm thinking of the cornfields and doing, you know, some of those things. So those fall activities, I think some farms are just looking at how do I diversify. So I think it's a mix of both.
And I guess I'll start with the person who's doing this already. What makes for, a successful agrotourism, making that conversion from saying, okay, we're just going to make and sell this stuff to really making this more of an experience and less of just a product delivered?
Yeah, I mean, you have to give people a reason to come there beyond just buying a bottle of wine or a jar of salsa or a bushel of apples. So events are big. But then also just, you know, people have to know that you have those events and you have that space. And so putting your name out there, and programs like Indiana Grown have been phenomenal in organizing and really promoting the growers and producers and all of us that are asking people to come back to the roots of that production and see where it is and stay for a while, because we also have these other things to offer.
What, when you were growing the business at Malora, what were the challenges in creating that idea that this is an experience? It's not just a place where you run in and grab a couple of bottles of wine and leave.
I think for a winery, and maybe a brewery in particular, but for a winery, and especially where we are, we're in Barkersville, which is it's growing now, but for a long time was just kind of this farming community that a lot of people, I still get asked all the time, where is Barkersville? And they might only be 20.
Not from folks who work in Frank. No,
right. Yeah. And so it was, you have to convince people, because to a lot of people, that sounds very far away, and that sounds like a drive, and you have to convince people, why would I go all the way out there when I can just go to the grocery store down the street from me and get a bottle of wine? And why should I get your wine? What makes it special? It's trying to get people. That's the hurdle, is to convince them that it is worth the time. It is worth the gas. It is worth maybe the day trip to come and see us. But really, it's a slow growth, at least ours was, of really just word of mouth and having to prove ourselves slowly over the years that we do offer fun events. We do, I think, make really nice wine, and we make something for everything, for wineries, overcoming this stereotype that Indiana only makes sweet wines. And just word of mouth and just working really hard and making sure that everybody's experience is good, because then they go and tell everybody else.
Who is your market for this, would you say?
It has changed a lot. So we are celebrating 14 years this September, and millennials have taken over, and that was not the case. So for a long time, our demographic was really, I would say, 40 and over, but a lot of people who had time and wanted something to do. So a lot of retirees and, you know, we're just looking for things to do. And then it has just gotten younger and younger and younger. But the challenge is that you really have to capture millennials' attention like that, like a snap, because if you don't impress them, they'll move on to the next big thing. So it's been interesting. This is, again, maybe more specific to wineries, but you have to change with the demographics, and that can be a challenge in itself.
Samantha, is their experience an isolated one, or is the market for agritourism sites changed and evolved over the past?
I think it's developed. I think it's all like any market. It's growing and it has to make changes to stay competitive. And each of these businesses that are in agritourism are, how do I draw customers here or consumers here to be interested in my business and want to come back or tell their friends to come back? So I know millennials got brought up, and millennials, a lot of stuff that's looked into millennials has been discussed about, even the big thing being about experience. And so how do you create these unique experiences at each of these places? Because when we're talking about the growth, that there's, you know, so many members and so many wineries now, how do you stand out in your own field.
And Heather, I guess variation of the same question. With your research, how have you seen the market kind of evolve?
Well, I think you see more people seeking out family-friendly activities and just, you know, keeping in mind when you go to a park or a brewery, there's chances are several things along the way that you can see, locally owned restaurants, little shops, and people are really seeking out that information right now.
We are talking about agrotourism here in Indiana today on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about agrotourism here in Indiana. My guests are Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Samantha, we've talked about the explosive growth sort of in the wineries and the breweries. Are there other parts of the agrotourism industry that are experiencing significant growth right now?
Yeah,
Don't worry, Heather. You're going to get your crack at that one, too. I was looking at the body language. Okay. All right.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you're seeing farmers markets grow. More vendors are wanting to come in and sell their products there. Farmers want to be connected with their consumers as well. I think it's a mutual thing that you're seeing is both sides want to have this relationship. So you're seeing growth there. I mean, I even thought of during the break, like Christmas tree farms, too. And people like to go out and pick their tree rather than go to Home Depot or other stores maybe and get it that way.
Okay. Heather, promised.
Well, you know, you mentioned Christmas tree farms. And I know a lot of Christmas tree farms, you think their business is only in the month of December, end of November. And a lot of them are moving towards the model of maybe having a fall activity, having a corn maze. Dull's Tree Farm, just slightly north of where we're at right now, they had Easter activities for kids and adults, grown-up Easter egg hunts. But it was a way to get people on their farm to learn about their operation and be, oh, well, I can come back in here in December and get my Christmas tree. So you're seeing more people think outside the box a little bit, outside their model. If they are just an apple orchard, maybe growing pumpkins, bringing people in earlier, or maybe having springtime activities. So I think the market is ripe for that right now. People are looking for it. And what you mentioned, farmers markets, we're seeing more freestanding markets opening up. So like a farmers market, but open more often. So Kokomo recently opened a little market store. It's open every day, but their vendors can have their products in there and they don't have to sit there and serve it and sample it and sell it. They can continue about their work week. But it's a farmers market that continues throughout the week. We're seeing a lot more of that.
What, I'm going to stay with you, Heather. What are the challenges? I mean, in terms of, and I'm gathering one of them, maybe finding your market with this, that, you know, obviously more traditional sort of businesses have plans to do that, but there is a certain almost Field of Dreams-ish quality here that if you build it, they will come, which worked great as fiction, but not so much as a business plan. You know, I guess what I'm going with is, what are the challenges in making that pivot and saying, okay, we are in effect going to try to sell an experience here?
Well, I think you have to know your audience. Like any business, you have to know who is coming. And I think you also need to make good partnerships with your community, with your chambers, your extension offices, the people whose whole job is to solely promote your county tourism. Indiana has a really strong, not only tourism industry, but also at the county level. And their job and their goal and their mission is to develop every resource in that county. And I think they want to see more people come, and they also want to share why you want to live, work, and play in that space. And so that does really fit along with the message of agritourism.
Sarah, because you referenced that too, that you, you know, it wasn't just about building a commercial relationship, but building a kind of a community-based relationship. A, how do you go about doing that if there are people out there thinking, well, yeah, I would like to try something like this. And, you know, what are the costs? What are the challenges in doing it?
Yeah, well, Heather said it, you know, connecting with whatever organizations are in your community that are there for that purpose. So joining your local chambers, you know, hooking up with your local tourism program. When we first started, Johnson County didn't even have, you know, a tourism program or organization. And that has changed. And it's been wonderful because that has opened the door for other agritourism and tourism spots in our community. But right, just putting, you know, trying to make those connections. For us, you know, we really wanted to be a space that gave back, which I know is not as easy for others, but we really tried to use our space to give back to the community, doing things that were fundraiser, you know, just to try and position ourselves in our community as a place that wanted to help, that we wanted to, you know, be a cause for good and doing good things in addition to being a space that families could come together and bring people who were visiting and all that. But that, right, that does come at a cost, especially if you are a new or you're new to that industry.
Yeah, and your margins are tight.
Correct. Yeah. So I would say just figure out, it doesn't have to be some grand scheme, you know, having thousands of people for this fundraiser, but find out ways to get involved in the different groups and organizations in your community, how to do so in a way that does give back. And I think that you will, it's not going to be overnight, but mm-hmm. I do think that it can grow and help you position your place in your community.
Samantha, what are some of the models that you've seen that have worked, that you've reported on?
Well, I've seen what some of the models I've at least observed even is at least definitely I've seen breweries do brewery tours. So a bunch of breweries will even collaborate together and be like, okay, here's a little map. Essentially, you stop at these and we have a pint glass or something for you as like a celebratory of visiting all of them. So they kind of team up. So it kind of becomes a community of let's work together and get consumers to visit all of our all of our places, and then that's how you essentially start building that. So there's other, as you mentioned, working with your local communities, but also I think it's working with similar businesses to help.
Sarah, is that your approach as well? I mean, is it a more collaborative model rather than a competitive one with the other wineries?
Absolutely, absolutely. We are very collaborative. It is the industry is very supportive of each other, and I think that it should be in all the different industries. But right, trails are a really good way. Indiana Grown has a wine trail that covers the entire state, which is really fun. And that gets people excited, and it also helps people outside your community want to come and see what your little part of Indiana has to offer. And they'll make those stops along the way at shops and restaurants and things like that. But yes, collaboration is always a good route to go because it helps everybody, including yourself.
Heather, I think that's your cue to talk about the trail.
Well, we're pretty proud of the trail. So we launched it last Mother's Day weekend. And what it is placed on a map all of our Indiana Grown members who are wineries. We launched it to great success. At that time, we had about 27 members on the trail. Now we're up over 42. And so the nice thing is if you turn in the trail from the original printing, we're going to honor that. If you finish the trail at 42 wineries, we're going to honor that. And the next stop for us is a distillery trail and a brewery trail. So we're excited to be able to launch those throughout the next couple of months.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named David. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Track us down on Twitter @WFYI. Or find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. David writes, I'm loving the conversation so far, But what I haven't heard is where do we find this list of 15 plus 100 places hiding in our backyards? I'm in Plainfield and wondering what might be hiding in Clayton, Amo, Bellevue, and the surrounding area. Also, Bargersville is a nice quiet place hiding on 135, for those that know. Okay, Heather.
And I live in Bargersville, so I will attest to that. It's a wonderful place to live. So when you go to IndianaGrown.org, you can see on a map all of the members who have chosen to be located on the map. As you know, not all farmers and producers want their address on a map. And then also there are lots of stores and shops that have opened up recently that are all entirely dedicated to local. There's one in Noblesville called All Local. There's one in Converse, Indiana, Evansville. So you're seeing more stores dedicated to selling only local products, but IndianaGrown.org is a good place to start.
How is that changing the whole experience of shopping and consumption? Because it does sound like, you know, this new kind of emerging model is, for lack of a better term, less purely transactional than the old one. That the, you know, for lack of a better description, you know, for people of a certain vintage, you would go in and, you know, there's a loaf of bread there on the shelf. You pick up that loaf, you give them your money, and you walk out, and that is the limit of the relationship. But we're talking about something decidedly different here. How does that change the expectations on both sides of that equation? I'll start with Heather, but I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this.
Well, you see more and more consumers really wanting to know where their food came from, or taking a class to learn how to make that food, going to a cheese shop and learning how to make a cheese, watching their milk be processed. You know, people really want to get invested in that. But at the same time, they want to be able to easily find products at the grocery store and know that they're local. And not everyone has time to flip over the label and Google it. So branding really helps. And that's where Indiana Grown comes in, because there are people who are asking for local. And local at a grocery store could be Red Gold tomatoes or Prairie Farms milk. It runs the gamut. But then you also will see, you know, value-added sauces and salsas and snack mixes and chocolates. So there is more growing in that space, and you're seeing it more often, from the lunchroom plate at a school to corporate dining to even at the airport.
Sarah.
One thing that I've kind of noticed that I think is really interesting, and for on our side it really humbling, is I feel like consumers have a lot of pride about the products that are being made in their own communities. And like I said, it's very humbling for us that people are seeking out, you know, our wines, our product, because they're proud of it. And they like saying, you know, this is the winery that I visited, and I got to talk to the people who made it, and I got to see the vineyard where it grows. And they're proud to take it to their dinner party and talk about it. And I think that goes beyond wine to a lot of other products, where, you know, they pick up a jar of mustard and they're like, I talked to the person who made that. I'm proud of that. And I'm proud that it came from my community. Yeah, I think that's something I've seen a little bit more of. And I think especially because programs like Indiana Grown have made it accessible in the grocery stores, so people are more aware of it. And then with that comes, this is really neat. I'm really proud that Indiana has this many producers, farmers, And there's some pride and loyalty.
Samantha, same question.
Yeah, so I think based off of some of my previous reporting about consumer behavior, I think something that's interesting is while you see a lot of trending towards online shopping and ordering and just delivery, there's still this drive, though. I think it's, as Heather mentioned, with this connected to what is grown in your backyard, what is there. So you're kind of seeing this branch off, kind of separated from what I've at least been observing, is people will get certain things on your standard generic items maybe online, but then it may be some more like the cheese or bread, or they want maybe a more personal connection to it that maybe before they might just ran to the grocery store and just bought whatever was on the shelf. But then even grocery stores are finding ways to, I'm thinking of several have made like areas where they distinctly say this is from Indiana. And so they're really figuring out how to advertise for convenience for people to see, oh, I want to buy something that's made in my home state. Let's go purchase that.
Sarah, you said something that in addition to this desire to be local, it also sounds like it's becoming a way of asserting identity, too. You know, in the way that, you know, when you're a teenager, the music you listen to sort of defines who you are. And it's a shorthand for saying, okay, this is who I am. This is this is what I care about. I thought I heard a little bit of that in the way you were describing the pride people would take and saying, okay, this is the wine I drank. This is what I know about it. Could you explore that a little more?
Sure. Yeah. You know, and I'm kind of coming, you know, we have our tasting room and we see lots and lots of customers, but I'm also at the Carmel Farmers Market every Saturday morning. And it's one of my favorite places because it's a little less rushed. It's not as busy. And I get to actually have really nice conversations with our customers. And I think you're right. You know, their identity, and, you know, it's already their identity because they are giving up a Saturday morning to come to a farmer's market and seeking out these local products. So that's part of their identity.
It's a way of making a statement, I guess, is where I'm going.
Sure. And but I think, you know, tying it back to the agritourism, when they can then go to that place, so they talk, they have those conversations at a farmer's market, or they discover it in the Indiana Grown section at Kroger. But then a lot of the places that have that agritourism aspect, then they can go and start a relationship with the place, whether that's conversation with the grower, the maker, the producer, conversation with the staff, making it their spot. One thing we love hearing our regular customers at the winery say is, I wanted to take them to my winery. You know, they call it theirs, and it is part of their identity. And, oh, I know the owner. You know, they love it, and we love it, too. Like, we want to know all of you, and we want this to be your place. And so I think that's, yeah, there is that pride and that identity of, I support local, I get to know my local producers, and I want to share that with my friends, my coworkers, my family.
Is it a question of identity and making a statement also for the producers? For you folks?
For us to...
Yeah, well, I mean, basically say this is... Because there are many ways you could sell your wine.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Why is this way is the way you chose to do it?
Because it's based in relationships. And I think that is what we have found to be the most rewarding way to do our business is to found our business and relationships with customers. So farmers markets, Indiana Grown, their events, and then just our tasting room and having that interaction. It's important to us.
Heather, is that what you find when you talk with the other members, that it, for them it's more about relationships or...
Well, a lot of them will see repeat customers or people who send it to a friend and then the friend orders it through, you know, Market Wagon or Green Bean Delivery, or they go to seek it out at a grocery store. But it is very much about relationships. We've seen a lot of that play out at some of our events where we've inadvertently placed a blackberry farmer right by a winery who just happened to be looking for blackberries, who are still doing business 2 years later. So those relationships start at the ground level, pun intended, and really grow from there. And it really emanates from the business plan of these agritourism destinations.
Is that the case, Samantha, and the people you talk to in your reporting, that it, for them it is much more about the relationship or?
Yeah, I think the relationship is a key factor. I think it's also a word that I would throw out there is transparency. I think people really like to have this idea of exactly how things are done, almost in a way, and knowing, and that transparency with the producer is really critical to some, is, and that's part of, I think, that relationship.
So is it a product also then of a lack of trust in more purely commercial or larger operations?
I think it's because you have the relationship to where if I had a question about a product, the consumer could feel like I can ask the producer here and hopefully based off of the trust and that's been built, I can get an honest answer and feel like I, as a consumer, I'm making the decision I want to make.
We are talking about Indiana's growing agrotourism industry today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, there are several ways you can do that. You can call us at 866-476-3881. That's a toll-free call. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Indiana's agrotourism business. My guests are Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting Business Reporter Samantha Horton. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named Dennis has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dennis, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate this discussion, and I think it's super important as the whole economy changes. I was just going to ask with Indiana Grown, have they noticed that they're having an impact with some of the bigger kind of the agricultural interest? You see a lot of still big factory farms in the state. You see what happened at Fair Oaks. Do you feel like your members are having a positive environmental impact? I just haven't heard that part of the discussion as much today, knowing that Indiana has a long history of these big, massive corn or soybean, that kind of stuff, because it has been an explosion in local that I really do love, and I appreciate all your products that you guys work with.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Dennis, Heather, I'll let you have that one first.
At Indiana Grown, we market and promote all forms of agriculture, food, fiber, and fuel. Our job is to be a marketing initiative and arm for the agriculture industry. We look at it as all agriculture across the state, and it takes farms of all sizes to feed each zip code, each county in Indiana. So our job is more to promote all those forms of agriculture, not necessarily segment the population into one mm-hmm. form versus another. So we really just kind of stick in the promotion of the family farm, the farm production, food producers, and that's really our initiative and our mission.
Is that a challenge, though, for Indiana Grown and really – because if I've learned anything in doing food shows for almost 9 years now, it's people have really strong feelings mm-hmm. about this question, you know, from all sorts of angles. A, the whole eating local and mm-hmm. and knowing that, but also, you know, questions about how animals are treated and the process and all of that. And I hear what you are saying is that you're trying to create a neutral platform here.
We do.
But you're dealing with a constituency that is anything but neutral.
Well, you know, I'm a mother of two. I'm the primary shopper in my family, and I look at it as shopping for food and your choices is such a personal decision. So it's really not for us to tell people how they should shop, but if they want to find bacon at a local meat shop in their area, we're here for that. If they want to find a stand that's selling sweet corn or know a little bit about someone that's making chocolates and candies, we want to help them find that. But there's so many different factors that play into someone's decision to buy food that's not really an area we venture into. We look at Indiana Grown as a big tent to encompass all the different ideas of agriculture in the state, and that's really kind of where we focus our time.
So I'll throw this to Sarah then. The other part of Dennis's question that at least was implied, I think, are you finding that your business model, this approach, that it's more about the relation, it's not just about the product, it's also about the relationship and how responsibly it is created? Do you find that attitude is contagious with other businesses?
I think so. You know, and especially, you know, we are within our kind of little bubble of Indiana wineries and maybe extend that to breweries and distilleries. But I do think that we all are on the same page. Oliver's huge, but there's still not anything like a mass producing winery that you would find on the West Coast or anything. You know, they're the biggest winery in Indiana, yet they are still, you know, in relatively speaking, you know, across the country, a smaller winery, giving that personal relationship-based experience. So, yeah, I do think that collaboration, like we were talking about before, does, you know, breed that, or it is contagious, that relationship-based kind of model of how we do our business.
Samantha, you know, he referenced the Fair Oaks controversy. You know, in terms of reporting on this business, I mean, how rare a circumstance is that? Or is this something that is more common than we might know about?
Well, I have to just, from my reporting experience, this is the first one I've really reported on so far. So I don't want to necessarily say something that isn't, I don't fully am aware of. But, I mean, I think I'm going to throw us back to, I think, what's become clear out of this, back to what I said earlier about people really wanting transparency. And, like, Fair Oaks, the big thing has been, it's been, like, highlighted as the Disneyland of agritourism. So it's been this really renowned place. So I think there's questions out there, and maybe some people might have some questions of trust right now. And that's what, as Fair Oaks has to figure out, is how are they going to manage? And they've released statements, and they're making comments saying that they're going to try to address it. But I think that's going to come back to that transparency, and how does a consumer at the end of the day then feel like enough has been done or not? That will be, I think, what we'll have to see.
We are talking about agrotourism here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Quinn has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Quinn, you're on the air.
Hi. So I am a young person who is interested in rural Indiana and agriculture, and I was wondering what good agrotourism activities would be for someone who is under 21.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Quinn. Heather.
You know, I'd really say, first off, visiting the Visit Indiana website. It is a wealth of information. You put in the area you're looking for, and you're going to find outdoor hiking and outdoor activities. It is the time of year for that. And then you can plan your trip from there, you know, finding a local place to eat, finding maybe a local market in the area. But there's always something that you can do, especially outdoors in Indiana this time of year, especially as it ties to Indiana culture, historical markers. And everyone loves a trail. So there's always tenderloin trails, ice cream trails, donut trails. I know that doesn't sound very healthy, but if you're outdoor hiking, you can walk it out. But there are plenty of things to do and plenty of trails and maps and activities planned for you. But Visit Indiana is really a great place to start.
Sarah, with your business, I mean, is it because that raises a question? Yes, outdoor hiking and trails would be great, other than, you know, when it's January and 18 below zero out there, whatever. Are there seasonal peaks and valleys for you, and, you know, what are they?
Definitely. Summertime and holidays are our top times, you know, because summertime is when we have our events and we have a lot of that outdoor space, and it's when people are seeking outdoor activities, and people just tend to drink a little bit more in the summertime when they're celebrating and it stays light out, you know, really late, and so people are a little bit more into that atmosphere. And then obviously the holidays are a big time for wine. But, you know, that's where, again, the agritourism has really become fundamental to our business, because it is true, and, you know, there's dry January and people have their New Year's resolutions, and it really does slow down after the new year. But that's when we said, you know what, we're going to feature a different soup every weekend, and we're going to have soup and music. And if you want a glass of wine, of course we have that too. The other thing I was going to say is we don't complicate it. Mm-hmm. The simple formula is music, food, and wine for us. That's it. It's about, I mean, now sometimes that's on a big scale and sometimes it's on a smaller scale, but music, food, and wine at a winery is a winning combination every time. And so we just kind of translated that into the winter time with soup and music. And that has really, without doing those types of events in the winter, it would be bad news for the business, but it has kept us going through our winters and has been really great for us.
Samantha and Heather, I'm going to ask both of you a variation of the same question, because agriculture is all about the seasons, ultimately. And in some ways, sort of the mass production of food has taken us away from that notion. You know, you expect to be able to buy a lot of the foods you like now any time of year, whether they're, you know, it's their season or not. But in some ways, this movement is driving us back to, so are we seeing seasonal changes with the, you know, with the market for agritourism? And does it cut across the board? We've got a very specific example with Sarah, but okay. Samantha is throwing Heather under the bus. So we're going Heather
That's
first.
Fine. I'll take it. First. I'll catch it. I think that we're trying to tee up activities for people specific to summer. So with Monumental Marketplace coming up and then further on to the Indiana State Fair, we have a store at the Indiana State Fair that our members participate in that is solely dedicated to finding ag products from all over the state in one place. And of course, it does peak and valley as the seasons change. You know, you come towards holiday time, we're talking about gift giving. You know, it's cold, let's go to a local coffee roaster or a tea shop. You know, you want to grill, it's warm out, let's go to a meat shop or talk about that farm and that meat you can buy direct. So we do try to shift our marketing focus with the seasons and with the weather. And I think Indiana does provide enough to be able to do that.
Samantha, same question.
Yeah, and I think that it's a lot of what Heather already spoke about, but I also think right now, I'm thinking of with weather, it's, you know, while it is reliable right now, because it's so reliable, mm-hmm. think about all the other, right now I know there's been a lot of coverage about farmers taking hits. Agritourism's mm-hmm. also right now facing a challenge, because if you want to go pumpkin picking later in the fall, I mean, that's granted maybe not planted yet, but I'm thinking of some of the things that need to be planted now that you might mm-hmm. want to experience later, and right now it's not a good time.
Corn mazes. Mm-hmm. Were they yeah. able to get the corn in? You just don't know.
Yeah.
So, and that raises another question. I mean, we're seeing tremendous growth right now, but with any sort of emerging industry and the fact that even something like Indiana Grown is only about 4 years old, mm-hmm. you say, what are the obstacles? What are some things that to further growth that, you know, ways that it would be easier to launch these businesses? I guess I'll start with Sarah, but I want to hear everybody's thoughts. What are some of the obstacles, the impediments, either as public policy questions or, you know, just old business practices that might need to be modified to take advantage of the opportunities for growth in this area?
Yeah, well, for us, you know, being essentially an alcohol business, there was definitely a few hurdles with
Sunday sales.
State laws. Yeah. Well, for us, for a long time, yeah. because we could sell on Sundays yeah. from the tasting room, it really didn't. And again, going back to why agritourism is important, the reason it didn't impact us was because people often aren't coming to us on a Sunday just to grab a bottle and leave, because we're a haul out there, you know, we're a drive. Mm-hmm. So when they're coming because we have music or we have a food offering or something like that. So again, making an experience while they're there kind of protects you from, you know, a liquor store taking your business. But, you know, we have a lot of different restrictions on us as far as participating in offsite events. So going to different festivals, different events in the community. You know, we have to abide by what can sometimes be restrictive mm-hmm. Laws or policies, but you do what you can and you mm. try to, you know, work things out the best way you can to still get that brand out there and to reach consumers. And yeah, old business practices, I think, you know, for us, we have kind of become known as a winery that's a little bit more, we take risks for better or worse, but we like to have fun. We like to do different flavors and put wine in a can and have fun with, you know, crazy flavors of cider. And that's worked for us. And that's what keeps people coming back. Because, you know, almost always the first question a customer asks us when they come in is, what's new? Mm-hmm. What do you have that's new? They want something new and something unique. And so getting out of the old model of, well, this is what sells, so let's just keep making it forever until we're done. Take a risk. You might take a hit, but you took the risk and it kept people coming back.
What do you hear, Heather, from your members? Are the obstacles or the things, the way the road might be smoothed a little bit for them?
Well, two things I hear often are, one, there are not nearly enough facilities in Indiana where someone can have their product made for them. So it's also known as a co-pack facility. Mm-hmm. There's an extreme lack of co-pack facilities. So if I have a product, I don't want to make it, they make it for me and they ship it for me. Not a lot of that in Indiana. And then also there are a lot of home-based vendors, and home-based vendors will say, I have a bakery at home and I make pastries. I'm very limited in where I'm allowed to sell that. I can sell at the farmer's market, providing I disclose I'm a home-based vendor, but I can't sell those products to restaurants or schools or businesses. So you're very restricted.
Presumably because there are no, you know, a lot of the safety and cleanliness controls.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, maybe seeing an increase in commissary or rental kitchens, shared kitchen spaces, that would probably help some of these people take that step to renting kitchen space to make their product in a certified inspected kitchen, and then they could increase their ability to sell to other places.
Samantha, what do you hear in your reporting? What do people, not to put too fine a point on, what do they complain about when it comes to this?
I think the challenge, based off of what people have said or what I've reported on even, is just really capturing attention. Is how do you, like we've gone back to earlier, how do you create a unique enough experience? But then before that even, it's that marketing of how do you get to people even prior to that. And I know Indiana Grown's done some of that work themselves, like trying to connect and kind of make it more accessible to people. But still, it's how does each winery have to market itself socially and get people to be like, let's make that trip out there this weekend, or to try to make that experience? Because I think that's the, everyone has only so much time. And so how do you make them feel like the time is worth it to try something new?
So, Heather, you've alluded to the fact that you got an event coming up here. Let's talk about that a little
bit. We're pretty proud of this day.
We've got just a couple minutes here.
So this is our one day to really show off agriculture. And what better way to do that than in the center of Indiana at Monument Circle? So next Friday, June 28th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., we will be set up on the entire circle. And it's going to range from food trucks to coffee roasters to produce farmers to wineries. And it's a free event. It's family friendly. And we're very excited. This is our third year.
So how do people find out more? Do they need to make reservations, or is it just drop in?
They just drop in.
Is there a place where they can find out who's going to be there?
Well, we have some information on our website and also Yelp. Yelp has been a really great partner.
And go ahead and feel free to give the URL for the
website. Oh, it's at indianagrown.org.
Okay. And Sarah, are you guys going to be there?
Oh, yes. We've been there. This will be our third year with them. It is a fantastic event. We love it. And we're just so grateful for Heather and all of the folks at Indiana Grown, because it's just such a great showcase for what we do and what everybody else is doing. And we hope people come out and visit.
So what are you going to offer?
We get to do tastings. Okay. So, 10 a.m. on the circle. Come on down.
Come have some wine.
Yeah. So we'll have a selection of our wines and doing tastings. And then people can buy bottles to take home if they'd like.
Okay. And what sorts of wine?
All sorts. A dry, semi-sweet, sparkling, sweet. And then our number one seller, which is a rhubarb wine.
Okay. That only in Indiana. Only in Indiana. Well, that will have to be the last word. I would like to thank my guests, Indiana Grown Program Manager Heather Tallman, Sarah Shaddy from Mallow Run Winery, and Indiana Public Broadcasting Business Reporter Samantha Horton, for what's been a lively conversation about a really fast-growing part of both Indiana's economy and Indiana culture. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.